All right. Okay, so let's open our Bibles back up to Ecclesiastes. We're going to start chapter 4 today, and we're going to try to go through the whole thing and wrap this chapter up. Not wrap it up, but go through it in one shot. So, so now we have the preacher. Hold on 1 second. Okay. So now we have the preacher, Solomon, who is looking at this from another perspective. And he says, let's go ahead and get somebody. Can I get somebody to read verses 1 through 8 and then the next person 9 through 16? Okay, we'll do the second. You got that? Okay, perfect, Ms. Kirsten.
Then I returned and considered all the oppressions that is done under the sun. And look, the tears of the oppressed, but they have no comfort. On the side of their oppressors there is power, but they have no comfort. Therefore I praise the dead who were already dead, more than the living who are still alive. Yet better than both is he who has never existed, who has not seen the evil work that is done under the sun. Again, I saw that for all toil and every skillful worker of man, envied by his neighbor. This also is vanity and grasping for wind. The fool holds his hands and consumes his own flesh. Better a handful with quietness than both hands full together with toil and grasping for the wind. Then I returned and I saw vanity under the sun. There is one alone without compassion. Companions, he has neither son nor brother, yet there is no end to all his labor, nor is his eye satisfied with riches. But he never asked, for whom do I toil and deprive myself of goods? This also is vanity and a grave misfortune.
Two are better than one, because they have a good reward for their labor. For if they fall, one will lift up his companion. But woe to him who is alone when he falls, for he has no one to help him up. Again, if two lie down together, they will keep warm. But how can one be warm alone? Though one may be overpowered by another, two can withstand him. And threefold cord is not quickly broken. Better a poor and wise youth than an old and foolish king who will be admonished no more. For he comes out of prison to be king, although he was born poor in his kingdom. I saw all the living who walk under the sun. They were with such second youth. They were with the second youth who stands in his place. There was no end of all the people over whom he was made king. Yet those who come afterward will not rejoice in it. Surely this is also vanity and grasping for the wind.
Okay. So now I read this on one, I'm like, uh-oh, what is he saying here? So, but let's walk through it together, and we can understand together what chapter 4 is all about. So, the preacher, Solomon, he says, then I looked again, we're back at verse 1, at all the acts of oppression which are being done under the sun. So Solomon is now going to walk us through the matter of oppression in verses 1 through 3. Again, a human perspective under the sun. Okay, but although, what position is Solomon in right now? What is he right now?
King.
He's king, right? That's right. He is a king. So he can manage and eliminate any oppression that may be under him as king, right? Because he has that power to do that. But as a king, he is also aware of how others around him rule and how they manage their people and their country. So he has two perspectives. He has an inside perspective on oppression from that kind of perspective, and then an outside, right? What he sees outside looking in. And so we'll kind of look at some of that here in a second as well. But he has insights under the sun of others, right, and how they govern their countries. Solomon knows that men, is man in his perfect state right now? In this, he's not, right? Man has fallen. And that is his perspective on how he looks at the whole humanity under the sun, right? We've talked about that, how he looks at everything. He knows that man has fallen, and he sees this repetition of men falling into the same sins and doing the same things over and over. But we know that Solomon was a wise man, right? He's wise enough to see what's going on. And so now he's going to share with us what he's observing, okay, as he has so far. He's observed things that he's done. He's observed things that other people have done. And at the end of the day, he says, what? It's all vanity, right? It's all vanity. Okay. But maybe Solomon has been tempted to fall under these same temptations of oppressing his people, okay? After all, Solomon, he has slaves himself, right? Solomon has slaves, and so maybe he could even be evaluating himself. Maybe he is the oppressor here, but he's looking at it from a different perspective. But either way, whether it's outside or inside, he's given us his perspective of oppressing the people from a governmental type perspective, okay? So let's go to the second half of verse 1. Then he said, and behold, I saw the tears of the oppressed, and that they had no one to comfort them. And on the side of their oppressors was power, but they had no one to comfort them. Okay, he says that twice. So it should grieve us to see the oppression that is carried out by people against their own, right? What is it that causes men to do that? To lead with oppression, or to let it get to that point where it is oppression?
Greed, selfishness, and sin.
Yeah, greed, selfishness, and what else?
Sin.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. Fear of losing power.
The fear of losing power. Okay, absolutely. What's that? Misbelieve
what's going on in Europe right now with the free speech laws. Mm. They think that they're doing the right thing by sending people to prison for voicing an opinion they don't agree with.
Yeah, that's a way of doing it too, right? Okay.
Pride.
Yep. Absolutely. So all those, right? All of those stem from, like what Barry said, sin, right? Man wants to rule. Man is prideful. Man wants to maintain fear within other men so they can keep controlling, right? So we see that. And this is kind of what Solomon is looking at. And this really grieves his heart. So we see here that Solomon is grieved to see the tears. Okay, he says that he saw the tears of the oppressed. To see the tears of the oppressed, the power of their oppressors, right? So he's seeing this power in them and the failure of anyone to defend those who are down and suffering, right? So why is it in some countries that we fear to defend or stand up for the truth? Well, one of them is what you just said, right? You can get put in jail, right? What else? Get killed, right? Yeah, there's a risk of life. I mean, just look back a few years back and during COVID, like if you went against the grain, you would be grilled all over the internet. I mean, they would take you and drag you, and no matter who you were. And yeah, no, and when whatever your position is on that, there was no respect on either side, right? There was no respect. And so we see that. I mean, there was even people losing their jobs over it, right? There was no room for discussion. It was my way or the highway. Now, there were some companies that were trying to do things right. They delayed to the very end, but even then, they were getting ready to bend. So the power that I work for a corporate company, some of you do here, but the power above them was pushing down, and they were pushing, it was just trickling down to the simple man, us at the bottom. And so we saw that. And so Solomon is saying, man, the power that these oppressors have, you know, it's powerful. So he says the oppressors had power and saw that nobody would defend them. Why? Probably because out of fear. It seems like the wrongs of men would rule over the truth. And that's how you see that, right? Man's desires, man's truth will rule over the truth. They don't care what the truth is. It's all about their own prerogative. Okay? But we know today that above the sun and the heavens, the Lord our God watches everything, right? He watches in the shadows. The Lord is here. We know that everything is under control. So although he's talking about it from a under the sun perspective, we know as Christians that under the heavens, the Lord is under control and all. He allows everything to happen for a purpose. And so we can trust in him. We need to trust in him if we don't. Okay, so again, just like Solomon, we too should grieve when we see those who are oppressed on the news, right? We prayed for them this morning because it grieves our heart. Somebody brought that up. So we pray for this other country. Well, no, we didn't pray for that, did we? It was for the tsunamis. But we should be, right? You brought it up because it grieved your heart. It's fresh in your mind. Do you think that this will ever go away, this type of oppression in government? No? Okay. One day? That's right. Under the heavens, yes. Under the sun, no. Yeah, what was that, Barry? I'm sorry, I cut you off, boss. Same thing? Yeah. So one day it will, but not, do you think under our control, under human control, it'll go away? No, right? It could be temporarily paused, but the next generation will come in with the same sin problems, with greed and desires to fulfill their own lust, if you want to call it that. All right, so it seems like it'll never go away. I think man has a natural desire to rule. Turn back a few pages to go to chapter 1 in Ecclesiastes. Man is crooked, and we talked about this. Look at 1:15. Can I get somebody to read that?
What is crooked cannot be made straight, and what is lacking cannot be numbered.
Yeah, that's us. We're crooked, right? We can't be made straight. We're broken, okay? That's why we need Christ. That's why Christ came, because we're a broken people. We're crooked. We're not straight. So, okay, so now let's go back to chapter 4, verse 2. So he says, so I lauded the dead who are already dead more than the living who are still living. Now, this is an interesting perspective. Solomon gives us this weird statement here, okay, where he commends and congratulates the dead. You're like, okay, Solomon, let's help us understand, right? Because those who are still alive, they're still suffering under this system of oppression is what he's seeing, okay? So he's like, it's better to be dead, right, instead of dealing with this. So you're like, okay, I got you now, Solomon. But at first, it's kind of a weird statement. Solomon is excited here, as he is saying that death has provided an escape from all the persecutions and all the cruelties of life, okay? But here's something interesting. So he's saying that it benefits man to be dead rather than being persecuted. But as a Christian, does it benefit us in the same scenario? Does it benefit people to die now to get out of this cruelty?
Yes, if you're a believer.
Ah, that's right. So he said yes. He says if you're a believer, you agree with that? Okay, but what if you're not a believer? Bad news, right? It's probably better to be here alive, right, than to deal with eternity in hell. So
you can see he's talking about the earth.
Under the sun, right?
Under the sun.
Yes.
He's talking about the perspective of this existence. Not beyond this existence. Mm-hmm. Simply talking about those that are dead, man, they got made.
Yeah.
They're over. It's over.
It's over, yeah. You know? Exactly.
In a sense, it is.
Yep.
For this world.
Yep.
Where they've been, may not.
It may not be, that's right. So, you know, this is not a sense to go take yourself out, right, because you're having a hard time. He's just saying that if you're dead, yeah, you don't have to worry about it. But if you're an unbeliever, in all reality, this is nothing compared to what you're going to have to deal with, right? And as a believer, why can't you trust your Savior, right, to manage you through these hard times and cruel times? So, but yeah, so Solomon, okay, you're like, all right, it's kind of a weird statement, but it's a good perspective of what he's saying, right? So, so it's almost as if he's saying that suffering under such an evil system can bring relief through death. But again, I'm not saying to go hurt yourselves, but he's kind of alluding to being absent from it is better, right? So, but as a Christian, we need to think about that. And that what is the message that we have, right? What is the message that we give the world as Christians? What's that? Hope. That's right. The message of hope. And where is this hope found? In Jesus Christ. We have a message. When we meet people, like Jody mentioned, this young lady with her son, we need to give them that hope. We need to talk to them about the hope that we have. Okay? We're just foreigners, right? We're aliens to this world, Paul says. And so we need to give that hope. What good does it do if we have it, but yet we don't share it? Nothing, right? From an evangelistic perspective, an obedience to God to go out and make disciples, right? There's no value to that. So we need to be evangelistic in how we think, because there are people in the world today who are under this oppression, even at a local level, even children in homes that are unstable, and even women, and even some men, okay? But mainly the women and children, from my experience at least. So let's look at verse 3. It says, better off than both of them is the one who so he takes it to another level. Better off than both of them is the one who never has been, who has never seen the evil work that is done under the sun. So now he's going from post-suffering to pre-suffering. What is he saying here? That's right. It's better not to have been born. Okay? Now, again, this isn't a call not to go have children. Okay? So you can look at the extremes on both sides. So the person who has never been born escapes all the suffering and misery that is part of this life. Okay? They have not seen the corruption of sin. That's what he's saying. It's like Chad said. But on the other hand, they will also miss all the pleasures and opportunities that this life has to offer. Okay? How many of you have good memories? Okay. Well, hopefully everybody. Oh, y'all don't. Okay. You have a good memory right now. We're all laughing together. I'll give you some hope.
I didn't know what you meant.
Oh, just in life, general.
I don't have any.
Oh, you don't have any memories?
I have good memories.
Okay.
Yes. I didn't understand. I said, do I have a good memory?
Oh. She said, huh? No. Yes, I'm sorry. Yes, do we have good memories? Did I say that wrong?
I thought you meant
the same way too. Okay, you and Miss Becky have been drinking coffee together, huh? But yes. So we do have good memories, right? We've built good memories on this earth with your parents, maybe your family members, your children, your grandchildren, maybe with friends, taking vacations. There are good things to this earth from that perspective. Although it's all vanity, right?
So
right? What's that?
This is so hard to understand.
It is so hard to understand, right?
Because on chapter 3, 12 and 13, he's like, I guess like in a good state of mind where he's like, enjoy. Everyone should eat and drink and take pleasure in all his toil. This is God gives to men. Mm-hmm. And then chapter 4, he's already like, don't even be born.
Yeah. No, you're right. No, you're right. And so but different perspectives here. He's talking about from an oppressed perspective, like the government, like in under rule, oppression under rule. But yes, you're right, though. He does go back and forth that way, but he's right, though, too, that everything good that we have is given to us by God, right? That's not what we live for. That's not what we live for those moments. But yes, he is correct. But good observations. Okay. Let's see here. Okay, so what we're seeing here is that those who do not yet exist have an advantage over those who have already died and those who are presently living. They have not experienced, as mentioned before, sin or corruption. It's almost as if Solomon is given a case on why not to have kids, right? But that's not the command that God has given us. I have heard that from a human perspective, right? We don't want to have kids. What are some of the reasons from a worldly perspective why we should not have kids?
We'll populate the earth and it'll be overfilled.
It'll be overfilled? Okay, yeah. It's expensive. Costs money.
The end is near.
The end is near. Global warming, right? They're going to warm it up more. We were just talking about this. Yeah. Your career?
College is expensive.
Bad experience. College is expensive. Right? So, yeah, so all these things, right? They don't fit, you know, they don't fit in a vehicle, right? I like my Prius, and I can only fit, you know, one or two kids in there. I just strap one on top if I go to three or two maybe. But yeah, no, so again, but God, so what are reasons then to have children in the current state that we're in?
We need soldiers.
We need soldiers.
Yeah.
Okay. For joy. Okay. It's commanded. That's right. Obeying God. Right?
He calls them arrows.
Yeah. Our job is to train that next generation. Sharpen the arrows, because when we're gone, who's going to carry the baton? The next generation, right? All of you youth in here, no pressure, but you're going to save us all when we're all old and fragile. And my wife's laughing like, uh-oh, we're in trouble. She looked at Clarissa. Sorry, Clarissa. But no, right? There are leaders who have gone. Who's going to be next? There are fathers who have passed away that were good fathers. Who's going to be carrying on the baton? There are grandfathers. There are leaders. There are teachers. Who's going to carry on that next generation? And so that's our job, is to sharpen you, okay? And then you shoot that arrow out. Make sure the umbilical cord is cut right before you shoot it. And then let it go. And then just pray that they'll be good, right? The Lord protect them. Yes, I think of like fishing, right? When they shoot and that string,
come right back home.
Yeah, they will. No. Well, the problem is that you're pulling them back. It's not because they want to. You're just pulling them back. Yeah, the parents do.
Never cut the cord.
Yeah, never cut the cord. It's not for their sake. It's for your sake as a parent. Yeah, exactly. So, so young men pass out knives to your young boys, so that way they can cut that before, just in case mama doesn't want to do that. But no, in all seriousness. That's our job, right? Who will carry the baton? It's the next generation. And that's what we're here for, you know, to do that, to train the next generation. All right, so now he's done looking at it from the governmental side of it, right? The oppression that those leaders put on the people. Solomon now shifts from oppression in verses 1 through 3 and now looks at a work, okay? He looks at work through verses 4 through 6. Here we're going to see one more thing that frustrated the preacher, and that is that human activity and skill are motivated by the desire to outdo one's neighbor. Man, like, this guy's touching everything. Like, this came out of, like, I thought competition today was just a modern day thing, right? But this has been going on since man was created. Cain and Abel, right? Yeah, the competition there. There you go. That's a great point. Yeah. All right. Verse 4, he says, I have seen that every labor and every success of the work is the result of jealousy between a man and his neighbor. This too is vanity and striving after wind. Remember, what striving after wind mean? It's like what?
Chasing your tail.
Yeah, chasing your tail, herding cats, right? It just has no meaning. So it's vanity. Strife, after a win. So he sees that the whole cycle of life is driven by the competitive spirit. It's kind of what he's saying here. The desire to have better clothes, okay, to have better vehicles, to have a better home, to be decked out in jewelry, right? Like, hey, guys, look at me. How are you guys doing today? Hello, you know. When you get that new next best ring, ladies, right? Hey, right? Or you have your new set of earrings and you got your hair pulled back. And you're, hey, what's up? I'm just kidding. I don't know if you do that or not. But I saw an old preacher do that a long time ago, so I've always liked doing that. He actually grabbed an old plastic ring and put it on, like it's a big old diamond. He's like, hey, guys, and he's like, doing like that. But
I saw a trend. That reminds me of a trend in social media that it's, hey, look at my nails, but it's right in front of the steering wheel showing off the brand of the car.
Yeah, the attention right there. No, absolutely. Right, they're competing. How many of you like to compete with the Joneses? Don't raise your hand, please. It's just, right, we don't do that. It's not what we as Christians do. Okay, so who wants the latest phone all the time, right? And all these things, right? You're sometimes, it may not be intentionally competing, but maybe that desire for the next best thing, the greed, the culture, the things that it has ingrained in us. But here, it's almost as if Solomon is saying that we who are created in God's image, we don't deserve anything, right? Like, you don't deserve anything. You have it because God has given it to you. So this competitive spirit shows up in the workplace, okay? It shows up in athletes, shows up in the home, right? How many of you, if you have at least two kids, maybe one kid, right? They're always, maybe they compete with you, they play around. Sometimes they're in good nature, right? And sometimes the kids, they compete aggressively, right? In fact, I played soccer for many years, and boy, you talk about that was aggressive too. I can imagine a physical sport to get more aggressive. But football, things like that, we watch that today. We always see this in this UFC, boxing, kickboxing, all these physical sports, contact sports. But we see this in the home. We see competitiveness in hobbies, right? anything we can come up with, we can be competitive in it, right? I mean, you could enter a origami competition, right? Paper origami competition, and it's there. Everything you can compete in, you know. My oldest daughter used to compete at the Houston Fair and Rodeo for making flower arrangements on the table. And then they would grade them. And so, I mean, there's anything you can think of, right? You can compete. So, and if you can't compete, then, what's that? Then, yeah, there's always, I guess, somebody has to be last. So, no, I'm just kidding. But anyways, what does he say at the end? It's all what? It's all vanity, okay? Now, because remember this, and I see this in boxing. I still like watching boxing, but like Manny Pacquiao recently started boxing again, right? And I didn't get a chance to watch him or anything, but I'm like, man, what's this dude coming back out? He's old already. And then I saw them post his age, and I'm like, man, he's only a couple years older than me. He's not that old. But for the boxing world, it is, right? So there'll always be someone who is younger, faster, stronger, or even more skilled than you, okay? And that's what I used to tell my kids. Yeah, you can compete until that next person comes up behind you who has been gifted more aggressively than you, or maybe intellectually. Like, I'll never win a spelling bee in my life. I'm guarantee you that. But, hey, some of you probably could or have, right? Anybody ever won a spelling bee here? There you go. So, yes, it's very minimal. That's a skill that only the Lord gives. Right? So again, there'll always be somebody stronger, younger, faster, right, more skilled that comes up ahead of time. Your mind may be clear, but over time, the body deteriorates, right? It goes south. And so it's going to come one day. Let's see here. Okay, so we see this in the sports world. For the athlete, as they get older, they lose their stamina, their bodies don't respond, the way the brain's telling it to, right? I think I have that issue now too. It's slower because it's declining. Eventually that person is replaced by the next upcoming athlete. This can also happen with anything, even being a good salesman, right? Even enjoying something. But what can happen to a salesman, okay? You can make this product. They made it 20 years ago. And they can get stuck and say, this is the best product. There's nothing out there that's better, even though it was built 20 years ago. Well, sometimes that is true. But he's not staying up with technology and the things that are going on. Maybe there are things that are better, but they're stuck in defending just that one point of that generation of whatever it is. And sometimes they get out of date, right? Right, Noah? Oh, Mr. Phil, sorry. She's throwing you under the bus. An old bus. No, I'm just kidding. let's see, eventually. Okay, so this can also happen, yes, with anything, with a salesman, right? So is there really a purpose in competing? Don't answer that question because I know some of us are athletes in here. Some of us like to compete. So let's see what Solomon says. So if eventually you're going to lose or at the end of the day you're going to be replaced by somebody, then why compete, right? That's kind of what he's saying here. But let's look at the next two verses. He kind of answers that question, okay? So is there a real purpose in competing from a work perspective? Again, he's still looking at it from a work perspective. I'm kind of bringing it in from an athlete kind of, you know, that kind of perspective. But either way, at work we compete, right? We have goals, and we're all trying to meet those goals. And we're trying to do better than some because there's a reward sometimes at the end of that. Or some people just naturally just do their job and they exceed higher than others. But here in verse 5, he says, the fool folds his hands and embraces and consumes his own flesh. So here he says that the man who drops out of the race, or the one who stops working, or the one who no longer competes, he's a fool. Okay? So a fool would just sit there, hold his hands, and not do nothing, right? That'd be a fool. Imagine you hiring somebody to do work at your house, and then after that, they go sit down on your porch and just sit there with their arms closed. That would be frustrating, right? Like, look at this fool. Thank you, Noah, you don't do that, right? Noah goes above and beyond. He finds things to do when you can't get a hold of me. He's a good hand. And so his inactivity will make him fall, right? You're not going to hire that person again. In fact, you're probably going to run him off early. Okay? So if you don't run the race of life, you can hurt those around you, right? So especially if you're a man who has a family, you don't work, you don't do your job, you're not just hurting yourself, but your wife, your children, right? There's consequences of your work ethic, okay? So people who refuse to work destroy themselves. Just like, can you imagine, I know some of you are on the swim team or used to be like Noah, Chloe. Can you imagine, I'm not Chloe, I did it again, didn't I? Ah, I thought I had it fixed. Julia, I don't know what happened. About 3 weeks ago, I must have fallen on my head, but I heard Chloe like reversed in my mind. But anyways, if they blow that whistle, do you just stand there? You'd probably get kicked off the team, right? If you just stood there and you didn't compete, it would ruin your reputation. You'd probably never get to be on a team again, right? Or Layla, if you're painting a picture for school or something, they say, go, do your thing, and then you're just sitting there. You're going to fail your class, right? Absolutely. Or Stephen gets up to play up front, and he has his guitar, and says, all right, let's do worship, and he just sits there. He has the guitar, but he's like, yeah. Yeah, so that's not cool, right? So we do need to compete, right? We do need to finish the race. Verse 6 here, he says, one hand full of rest is better than two fists full of labor and striving after wind. Wind, not wind. So the solution to the issue is moderation. Like, there's nothing wrong with competing, with running the race, or a race. It may not be the race, which is life as a Christian, right? The perseverance of the saints. So the solution is moderation. It is better to have one handful of quietness, of rest, is what he's saying there, than two handfuls with an excess of labor. Okay? We should be satisfied with an adequate amount rather than press constantly for more and more. Like this verse spoke to me as I was sitting there. I'm like, man, rest. I've experienced the rest this last week, and it's been really good. But as I was resting, I've noticed that I was dehydrated, I was fatigued, I was this, I was that. But rest is a good thing, right? We shouldn't run 24/7. I'm preaching to myself, right? He says, a handful of rest is better than two fistful of labor and striving after wind. Okay? Our work should not be driven by envy either. That's one thing that we do, right? And then once again, he says, and it's like herding cats, right? Striving after wind doesn't mean nothing. And I thought about that. And let me see. I think I bring it up here later on. Yeah, I won't talk about it, but thinking about work when I was young and those who are still young that work under me and the patterns that I see. But we'll talk about it here in this section. So now let's look at verses 7 and 8. He says, then I looked again at vanity under the sun. There was a certain man without a second man, having neither a son nor a brother. Yet there was no end to all his labor. Indeed, his eyes were not satisfied with riches. And for whom am I laboring and depriving myself of good? This too is vanity, and it is a grievous endeavor. Okay, so another thing the preacher sees here is vanity in the workplace. Okay, a man who is not satisfied. A man who is alone and prefers to keep working to accumulate wealth rather than build relationships. He's depriving himself of what is good. Okay, some of us, I think I was like that as a young man. I worked and worked and worked. I loved being out there. It's not that I was trying to avoid being away from my family, but it was good to get that extra paycheck that was had a lot of overtime every now and then, right? Okay, so the man represented in this verse is a man who is alone. He has neither son nor brother. He has no friends or family, but he keeps on working well beyond that which will meet all his needs. And I think that's important right there. Working beyond that which will meet all his needs, right? So there's nothing wrong with working some overtime and being a workaholic, right? But why are we doing it? Now, that's what he's trying to, the intent here is, right? There's no end to his work. He keeps going and going. The question here is, how much is enough, right? How much of us say, just a couple more hours, just a little bit more, let's just do a little bit more, right? Just two more pigs we'll raise, right? Not a big deal, right, Mary? Oh, let's just get a bigger greenhouse. We don't need these small ones anymore, right? Just remembering all these conversations we've had in the past. I could tell you some stories, but I won't today, for my sake. right, so just a little bit more. So here we are. We have a workaholic in these verses 7 and 8. Who is working far more than he needs to. He can't even stop and ask himself why he's doing it. You right? Maybe just for the check. Mr. Phil, you have a smile on your face. Is that just some... Miss Cheryl. That's good, yeah. No, that's good. But I've been there in my life, right? I think most of us have probably been there before, or all of us. Okay, the text says that he deprives himself of goodness. Okay, if you look at that right at the end, he's depriving himself or depriving myself of good. Okay. Solomon's point is that there are good things in life that money cannot what? Buy. Where do you think the Discover card got their motto from? It's not from them. It's right here, right? Solomon. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, there are some things that money can't buy. And the workaholic deprives himself of those good things. Okay. Those good things. Even though I'm not the best example of it, but I try to teach all those who work under me to have a good balance, right? And work and at home, like go home on time. It'll be there tomorrow. Sometimes we don't want it to be there tomorrow. We stay late or I want to make my boss proud, so I'm going to get this last well on or do this last thing. And or make everybody proud, or maybe it makes you feel good because you've accomplished something. I don't know, right? So again, I know that's not a workaholic, but those are things that sometimes we can just lay down and it'll be there tomorrow. So there's no reason for this kind of man to be alone. He should be building relationships, okay? So don't allow your work to take or deprive yourself of good things. That's what he's saying here, okay? Another sign is that they do not find satisfaction in what they have. Sometimes that is. I've seen men who work because they don't want to be at home because there's a bad relationship at home. There's friction in the home. That's not good either. That's a whole nother reason. That's a not part of this subject, but it's a reality. Another sign is that they do not, this type of person is lonely with no companionship. Even if they are married, we see this today. I put here an example. I see this today in the oil field. People who work day after day with no days off, and they're just okay with it, right? Why? It's for the almighty dollar. I used to have people who worked 30 days straight. Or actually, they would work months straight every day. And when they needed a day off, they would just say, hey, I need a week off now. And so the company would find somebody, they'd go off for a week and come back for another 3 months. And when I took over, I said, oh, no, that's unacceptable. I'm going to force these people to spend time with their families. And we're going to go to seven on, seven off, or 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off, and force them. If they don't want to be part of that, then they don't have to work for me. Because I feel that that was too much. I mean, that's not good. Even if you don't have a family, you need to go and get away from this. But again, it's not safe either. People get fatigued. But again, so pay attention to those things. Help where you can. Okay, verse 9 through 12 says, two are better than one because they have good wages for their labor. For if either of them falls, the one will lift up his companion. But woe to the one who falls when there is not a second one to lift him up. Furthermore, if two lie down together, they keep warm. But how can one be warm alone? And if one can overpower him who is alone, two can stand against him. A cord of three strands is not quickly torn apart. All right, so here in this section of verses, Solomon begins to point out advantages of fellowship and partnership. So before, we saw somebody who works and is kind of by themselves. Now he's giving the benefits of what it means to have somebody there. Okay, he uses a few illustrations to kind of push this idea. He says that two workers are better than one. I know sometimes there's jobs that I do, even at home, and I'm like, man, I wish Jesus was still living here. Or I call my wife, hey, can you help me out, right? And because Jesus is my worker, right? Not my slave, but kind of, right? When they're underage, they kind of do. But yeah, sometimes like, man, I wish there was somebody extra here to help me out. So having a companion is better than being alone. And also, remember that even the Lord in Genesis chapter 2, what does he see? Huh? It's not good for man to be alone, right? So this isn't like Solomon just figured this out. No, even the Lord saw this. And what did he create for man? A woman, a helper. What's that? A suitable helper, right? Because man was not suitable enough, right? He couldn't do it, right? He was fell way short. So so God saw this, gave man woman, and now here we are. So before the fall, God said that it was not good that man should be alone, okay? So with that said, two working together benefit each other rather than themselves or by themselves. I love working with my wife. Yes, Phil, go ahead.
Another thing is that, you know, when it's a undesirable job, two people get it done faster so you don't have to deal with that undesirable job as long.
That's right. That's right. That is true. Yep. Yes. Weed eating. Oh, man. Yeah, I feel the pressure now. Like, once Clarissa leaves, like, I was like, we got to mow the lawn today. I'm going to get Clarissa to come out and help me. And she's at home. But when she leaves in 3 weeks, I'm going to be like, what? I'm going to teach the wife how to run the lawnmower. I tried it one time, and she could not make it out from under the tree. So we're going to have to take slow. She does good with the weed, but get out of the way. Full body armor if you have it, if you're around. Because she will take you out. Even if you're 20, 30 yards away, she'll get you. Yeah. So, again, okay, the preacher gives us a few illustrations of why it's important to have a companion. He says that if someone falls, there's nobody there to help pick you up. Okay? If someone spends a night in the cold by themselves, there's no one to keep them warm. If someone is attacked by themselves, they can be easily overcome. But if they have somebody with them that can help, then typically they'll likely get away, right? When somebody's attacked or by yourself, you're probably going down. But if you're there with somebody and you're attacked, maybe both or one of you can sometimes get away. Okay? He then gives an illustration of a cord of three strands. He says that it is not quickly torn apart. Then when the ropes are made, they are braided, right? Have you ever seen ropes where they make the ropes? Have you seen that? So the more strands you have, the stronger the rope is. I remember when I was in elementary, there was this guy, this young kid, he was in my class, but we used to do, every month we had to do inventions for science. We had to go invent something, okay? And mine was kind of corny. I invented this little fork. It had a fork on one side. I don't know, hold on. It had a spork on one side and a toothbrush on the other, and I put a little thing of toothpaste in the middle and said, once you're done eating, you can slide your toothpaste over, put toothpaste on it, put your lid back on, slide it back, and you can brush your teeth, right? It didn't go anywhere, right? I'm still here, so I still work for... But this kid, he came up, it was this little wooden thing, and it had like a three little fingers on it. And what he did, he got a rope and wrapped it through it. And on the other side, it held it, and what he did is, he didn't hold it, but it has some kind of turning mechanism. So you held the Y on this side, and then you would turn it a little bit, and that Y, you would slide it in between and pack those braids, and it was three strings. And what it did is it made it tight, and once he was done, he made this rope, and it was really cool, but you could see the strength of it. It was very impressive. And the illustrations always stayed in my mind because I was like, man, I would love to make one of those one day and make rope. But anyways, when things are braided, they hold on to each other, right? You can look at even like taglines that we use today or towing straps, right? It's just fibers that are woven together. And when they pull, they all share the load, right? The capacity. It's not the strain just isn't on one point or one string. They're all tied together, and they're pulling together, and they're sharing that load, which makes it stronger. Okay, so he's saying a cord of three strands is not quickly torn apart, is what he's saying here. Okay, so if anyone out there says that they can make it on their own, they are considered a fool, right? Because you can't make it alone. You can't be by yourself. Yes, ma'am.
I have my Bible on my notes. It says, the wise person will pursue cooperative ventures rather than give into jealous striving to be first, a striving that isolates him from others.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, if you have that kind of attitude or that type of sin in your life, you're going to end up alone anyways. Absolutely. So again, we are designed by nature to have companions, okay? Having others to help provide strength, protection, comfort, direction, guidance, and many other things, right? Whether we want to acknowledge it or not, we all depend on others for almost everything, okay? Do you make your own clothes? Do you build your own cars? No, we depend on community to do it. Yeah, you'd probably do. But you don't make your own clothes, right? Not today. You have, but not all the time, right? You still go to wherever you go to buy your clothes.
Some of us, when we were out in the country, we were raised to do everything.
Yeah.
When I got older, I thought everybody was that way. Everybody knew how to do everything. We put roofs on, we fixed our own cars, we took care of our animals. Mm-hmm. Everything was we did ourselves except for the veterinary stuff. And even some of that we did.
Yeah.
But then it teaches you to be a loner. Mm-hmm. And this is something that I struggle with today, mm-hmm. is that I was taught, I was raised, if I can't get it on my own, I don't need it.
Yeah.
And that's a hard one to overcome.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, so let's wrap this up. Thank you for those insights. Ladies who are independent, you're not designed that way. You're not wired that way, right? God has made you to depend on your companion, which is your husband. And husband, you too. Remember that. That was a freebie. So 13 through 16, so we can finish, is a poor yet wise lad is better than an old and foolish king who no longer knows how to receive warning. For he has come out of prison to become king. Even though he was born poor in his kingdom, I have seen all the living who walk about under the sun go along, and the second lad who stands in place of him. There is no end to all the people, to all who were before them, and even the ones who will come later will not be glad with him. For this too is vanity and striving after wind. So in this section of verses, we see a contrast between the young and the old. Age in the ancient world was valued as being a source of wisdom, okay? That should be today, but, you know, I don't know. Hopefully some of you still see that in the older people. Rulers were generally considered to be more wise than their subjects, but here in this text, we see the opposite. We see that the young person and the subject are wise. It is the king and the old man who are foolish, okay? In Solomon's estimation, it is better to be the young wise man, even though he is subject to and a relative to the king or related to the king. It says another negative we see with the king that makes it worse is that he no longer can even be warned. Okay, he thinks he knows it all. Right? He can't be warned. He will not listen to his counselors. We also see that this king has come out of prison. Okay, in verse 15, that tells us that there's a second lad who stands in place of him, that the people prefer a younger man rather than an old king. So this king was disqualified. Old kings are replaced, especially when they're old and foolish. Okay, if I ever get to the point where my mind is no longer sharp and clear, then please take me. Just send me home and let me feed pigs all day, pull weeds, whatever. But in all reality, even the second younger man will eventually be forgotten, right? We see that kings come and kings go. Even the second man may be younger and wiser, but he will soon come and go as well. Verse 16 says that this too is vanity and striving after wind. The poor, wise youth would be forgotten. His successor would also be forgotten. Time will pass. This is the way the world works. Whether we like it or not, we can't control it. Okay? So let's go ahead and pray. We're out of time. We're over time. So Heavenly Father, we thank you for this day. I pray, Lord, that we have learned some nuggets here from your word, Lord, and that we can take back and evaluate. Help us to evaluate ourselves and to think back on these things, Lord. We just thank you for what you've done. Prepare our hearts, Lord, and our minds for the message that will be preached this morning. I know it's going to be probably more like a Bible study, I'm going to assume, as Owen goes through and builds a case for this last section of Mark. We thank you, Lord. I pray that you be with also with Jesus, who'll be teaching for the children, and then those who will be worshiping as well through music. We thank you, Lord. We love you. We pray in your name. Amen.